Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for May 15th, 2017. We'll begin today's reading with a front page story entitled Moms with Big Hearts: Nurses Love Newborns Like Their Own by Mary Wyckoff from Danville. When a new life comes into the world, Holly McPherson is one of the first to say, "Happy birthday." She and other registered nurses in Presence United Samaritans Medical Center's Labor and Delivery Unit are the surrogate mothers who love the babies like their own. "I genuinely love them," said McPherson, who has three children ages 8 to 17. "We all love our job. We're all blessed." That attitude is prevalent among the 21 registered nurses and 5 obstetrics technicians who work in labor and delivery, postpartum and the nursery. There's one volunteer who handles just like they do every day of the year. "There are two patients, the mom and the baby," McPherson said. Torpen Crippen, nurse manager, said everyone paperwork. "On Mother's Day, those working today will step in to rock the babies, bathe them, feed them, and put bows in the girls' hair, and the mothers will get special there for a specific reason. They all have big hearts," she said. "They treat them like their own. Everyone has a motherly instinct. Attention to and who works in the obstetrics unit is sometimes when Crippen sees a baby in the nursery, she'll think, 'I haven't held a baby in a while.' She then takes time out of her duties to rock the infant, and other nurses do that as well. We don't stick them in a crib," she said. Brittany Brandon, a registered nurse, has been in the unit for a year and a half, and she said she doesn't want to work anywhere else. She's planning to attend the University of Illinois Chicago to become a As the mother of a girl and with another girl due on June 10th, Brandon thinks her own experience with motherhood helps her relate to the patients. Her duties are in labor and delivery, and she spends more time with the mother before and immediately after birth than with the infant. She tells the mother what to expect before delivery and then helps the mother and infant bond and helps with breastfeeding. She also shares the importance of skin-to-skin contact, which calms the baby and helps regulate the heart rate. The baby stays in the room with the mother as much as possible to help with the bonding process. Babies are taken to the nursery in the morning for assessments, screenings, blood draws, and sometimes just to give the mother a chance to rest. "I try to spend time with the baby in the nursery," Brandon said. "That special attention to the newborns and the mothers doesn't go unnoticed." Aurora Rodriguez of Danville welcomed Ian Gabriel Rodriguez on May 7th to her family, which also includes husband, Jose, and a daughter who's almost one. "They're really nice," she said of the nurses. "They let me know about everything and help me out a lot." The staff was good about giving her updates on how the baby was doing and also gave her refreshers on being a new mom. Kristen Bennett of Danville and her fiancé, Richard Hawkins, were waiting to go into surgery for her third child on May 8th. With two boys at home, they were excited about getting a girl and dressing her in pink clothing and bows. While Brandon made last-minute checks, Bennett said of the staff at Presence, "They've been amazing. They've been helping me." Crippen said the medical center sees about 50 births a month. "While most of the births go smoothly, there is a fetal demise about once a month," said McPherson, who does bereavement counseling. She helps the family go through the grieving process. "Even when a woman loses a baby," McPherson said, "she's still a mom. You're a mother the moment you find out you're pregnant, not when the baby's born. Some babies with health issues might be in the hospital longer than the mother. With the medical center's bed and breakfast program, the mother can stay as long as there is room available. We want to promote bonding," she said. "We try to be a support to the mom." Presence United Samaritans has a Level 2 special care nursery, which means it can handle babies requiring more intensive care. Specially trained nurses closely monitor the babies around the clock. Parents are always welcome to visit and encouraged to touch and hold their child. For the rare cases that the medical center can't handle, those babies are sent to other hospitals. The staff continues to care about the babies even when the infants leave the building. They follow up on the babies who are sent elsewhere for treatment and encourage families to keep in touch. McPherson, who has been in obstetrics for 3.5 years, described childbirth as a life-changing event. The women are vulnerable and scared, but McPherson said, and the others are there to help them, plus the fathers and the entire family, through the process. She also has a special skill of talking to babies in the womb and calming them down. "They call me the baby whisperer," she said with a smile. "I love being an advocate for women," she added, "which includes educating them and helping them learn about breastfeeding. In turn, mothers trust the nurses with their babies. The families also can know that the babies are safe. Presence installed the Hugs Infant Protection electronic security system more than a year ago. Tags are put on the baby's ankles, and an alarm goes off if there's a security breach. The unit is locked, and visitors are required to identify themselves for permission to enter and exit the unit. The entire hospital staff also undergoes drills and training to ensure the baby's safety." Our next article is entitled "The YMCA is Close to Naming a Director" by Carol Rem, Danville. The Danville Family YMCA Board of Directors expects to name a new CEO executive director for the local organization on Monday. The local YMCA Board of Directors launched a national search for a new CEO executive director in March to find a replacement for Michael Brown, who resigned July 21st. Brown had served the Danville Y for 3 years as its CEO and president. This is the second time the Danville Board has conducted a national search for a new CEO executive director after the board decided late last year to hold off on hiring a new director until it updated some policies and resolved some budgetary issues. In the meantime, Jessica McMasters has been acting as the Danville Y's interim executive director. The YMCA of the USA collected applications and resumes through the end of March and then pared down the number of candidates to 8, who were interviewed over the phone in mid-April. Dave Westner, president of the Y board, said most of the candidates were from Illinois, but a few were from out of state. The local board of directors is in charge of hiring the new CEO executive director from the trio of finalists that were forwarded by the YMCA of the USA. 3 finalists were brought to Danville for in-person interviews, Westner said. Vermilion Advantage coordinated tours of the city, and they also toured our facility and had a chance to converse with the staff. The Danville Y staff also was offered the opportunity to give input on the 3 finalists, he said. Westner said he is hopeful the new CEO executive director can start the week of June 12th. To be considered for the position, potential candidates needed to possess a bachelor's degree and a solid background in overseeing staff in multiple departments, budgets, and building improvements. Candidates did not need to have prior working experience with the Y because training and certifications would be available to become an executive director. Our next article is entitled "Catlin Prepares for Festival." The ladies of Catlin will host the 5th annual Strawberry Festival 5K Fun Run Walk on June 2nd through the 3rd. The race will start at 6:30 p.m., with registration starting at 5 p.m., June 2nd at Catlin Park. Registration is $25 for adults and $15 for children younger than 12 years. Registration by May 18th guarantees a free T-shirt. Awards will be given to the top 3 runners in 3 different age groups for both men and women. For children younger than 10, a kids' glow run will immediately follow. For information about registration for this event, visit www.ladiesofcatlin.weebly.com. On June 3rd, the 5th Annual Strawberry Festival will run 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Catlin Park. Children of all ages are invited to participate in the Dunk Tank, Catwalk, Beanbag Toss, and Bounce House. Several contests are planned, such as limbo, hula hoop, and bubblegum blowing. Musical performances include Bob Schifo and Live Through Wednesday. For a suggested donation, hot dogs, Italian beef, strawberry pie, and strawberry shortcake will be provided. Check the Ladies of Catlin website, www.ladiesofcatlin.weebly.com, for information. An antique car show, hosted by the Ileana Antique Auto Club, is new this year, and visitors will be able to register their children into the Illinois Child Identification Program hosted by Catlin Masonic Lodge. More fun will continue from 5 to 10:30 p.m. June 3rd in front of the American Legion on Sandusky Street as Salt Fork Music Boosters host Storm Aid 3. Visitors can enjoy more food, drinks, and music from Tim's Tin Shed 5 to 6:30 p.m., Triple Play from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and the Zach Dable Experience from 9 to 10:30 p.m. For more information about the Ladies of Catlin, visit www.ladiesofcatlin.weebly.com. The next article is from the Associated Press out of Washington. Trump could pick FBI head next week. President Donald Trump said Saturday that we can make a fast decision on a new FBI director, possibly by late next week, before he leaves on his first foreign trip since taking office. Even that is possible, he told reporters when asked whether he could announce his nominee by Friday, when he is scheduled to leave for the Mideast and Europe. At least five candidates to be the Bureau's director were in line Saturday for the first interviews with Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his deputy Rod Rosenstein at Justice Department headquarters. They are among nearly a dozen candidates Trump is considering, a group that includes several lawmakers, attorneys, and law enforcement officials. I think the process is going to go quickly. Almost all of them are very well known, Trump said aboard the plane that took him to Lynchburg, Virginia, where he gave the commencement address at Liberty University. They've been vetted over their lifetime, essentially, but very well known, highly respected, really talented people. And that's what we want for the FBI. The Trump administration is looking to fill the job, which requires Senate confirmation, after Trump abruptly fired Director James Comey on Tuesday. The first candidate to arrive was Alice Fisher, a high-ranking Justice Department official in the George W. Bush administration. She left after about an hour and a half inside the building and declined to comment to reporters. Adam Lee, special agent in charge of the FBI's Richmond, Virginia office, was also interviewing Saturday afternoon. Among those expected were Acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe, Michael J. Garcia, an associate judge on New York's highest court, and GOP Senator John Cornyn, the number two Senate leader and a former Texas Attorney General. That's according to two people familiar with the search process who weren't authorized to publicly discuss the deliberations and spoke on condition of anonymity. Sessions has faced questions over whether his involvement in Comey's firing violates his pledge to recuse himself from investigations into Russian interference in the election. Some lawmakers have alleged the firing was an effort to stifle that FBI probe. Justice Department spokeswoman Sarah Isger Flores said Sessions and Rosenstein are involved in the interviews because the FBI director reports to them as Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General. They can make recommendations, but the President will ultimately make the hiring decision. Fisher formerly served as Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department's Criminal Division. She faced resistance from Democrats during her confirmation over her alleged participation in discussions about detention policies at the Guantanamo Bay facility in Cuba. She also was deputy special counsel to the Senate Special Committee that investigated President Bill Clinton's Whitewater scandal. The FBI has never had a female director. Lee, a long-time agent, has worked in a variety of positions within the Bureau. Before Comey tapped him to lead the Richmond office in 2014, he was chief of the Public Corruption and Civil Rights Section, investigating some of the highest-profile cases against government officials and civil rights violations in recent years. He also led the FBI's Global Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and antitrust program. Here's an article out of the community section entitled, Being a Mom is the Best Job in Life, by Sherry M. Askren, who is president of the United Way of Danville area. And she says, Good Sunday morning, everyone, and happy Mother's Day. Being a mom is the best experience of my life. I often hear people say, Wait until you become a grandparent. It's the best, nothing like it. Well, I am one mom who is happy with what I have right now, watching my kids grow and mature into fun-loving but responsible adults makes me a very proud mother this Mother's Day. I think it's fair to say that each one of us enters motherhood with a set of beliefs or expectations about what it means to be a good mother. We develop these beliefs from the pressure of society and the experiences with our own parents. These outside influences can have so much effect over us that when we finally do become mothers ourselves, it is hard to listen to our own ideas of what a good mom is all about. So what does that good mom look like? She is a selfless, loving human who must sacrifice many of her own wants and needs for the wants and needs of her children. A mom works hard to make sure her children are equipped with knowledge, skills, and abilities to make it as a competent human being. Studies have shown that a child who receives love and attention from his or her mother is less likely later to fall in love with someone who offers love conditionally, whether it be with behavior control or abuse. From the moment a woman becomes pregnant, it is her responsibility to provide a safe and secure environment for her baby to grow. This responsibility continues once she becomes a mother, whether it's making sure her child has a roof over his or her head, or it's keeping those monsters away late at night. Providing a safe environment to help children grow also helps boost their own mental and emotional development. Being a good mom means being there to teach your child the importance of rules and being responsible for his or her actions. As children grow up, there are so many differing opinions and values they will find from movies, the internet, television, and even the friends they choose. A mother will need to be strong to guide her child to help figure out his or her own goals and values in life, as well as show the importance of education, manners, and being empathetic to other people's feelings. Being a mother is perhaps the hardest, most rewarding job a woman will ever experience. Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Here's an article by a guest columnist, Trudy Lieberman, on Meals on Wheels might lose support. Federal funding for Meals on Wheels is on the chopping block. The Trump administration budget blueprint released in March calls for the elimination of two federal block grants. That's money the federal government gives the states for social welfare programs. And those programs include home-delivered meals and meals served in senior centers. Most of the nation's 5,000 meal programs also rely on money from the Older Americans Act, passed in 1965, to fund about 35% of the cost of the meals they serve. Those funds are also in jeopardy. The budget blueprint calls for an 18% cut to the budget of the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, which administers the act, and programs are bracing for more cuts. Paul Krantz, who heads the Senior Nutrition Program at Meals on Wheels in Martinez, California, says while his program would lose about $67,000, it now gets from one of the block grants, he's really worried about the potential budget cut at HHS. If they take 18% of that, it's going to be big. Why the attack on meals delivered to the elderly, many of whom are homebound, ill, and unable to cook or shop? At his March news conference, Budget Director Mick Mulvaney told reporters, Meals on Wheels sounds great, but to take that federal money and give it to the states and say, look, We want to give you money for programs that don't work. I can't defend that anymore. He claimed the program was just not showing any results. Mulvaney didn't say what he meant by results. He didn't have to. His comments were aimed at creating doubt in the minds of legislators who might look favorably on cutting the Health and Human Services funds for use elsewhere in the federal budget. The potential impact on hungry elders was not a high priority. It didn't matter that thousands of seniors on waiting lists for food in communities across the country are, in effect, stuck in a breadline. Several academic studies examining Meals on Wheels programs have challenged comments, like Mulvaney's, regarding the program's effectiveness. A recent randomized controlled study, funded by AARP Foundation, showed significant differences among seniors on waiting lists, those receiving home-delivered meals, and those getting deliveries of frozen foods. Seniors with home-delivered meals reported the greatest improvement in health and quality of life. In 2013, Brown University researchers found that meals delivered to seniors allowed them to stay in their homes rather than going to a nursing home, and that resulted in a net savings to Medicaid, which pays for about half of all nursing home stays. Nursing home funding from Medicaid may be in trouble too if Congress cuts more than $800 billion out of Medicaid during the next 10 years, which has been proposed. States could have fewer dollars to channel into nursing home care. The picture is bleak for senior services. 38 states also use Medicaid for home-delivered meals. None of this makes much sense. The number of people needing food is growing rapidly and has been for decades. Erica Kelly, a government affairs officer for Meals on Wheels America, an umbrella organization for local programs, told me its members are already serving 23 million fewer meals than in 2005, a decline that has resulted in an increase in hunger. Federal funding has not kept pace with the need. Money from state and local governments and private philanthropy hasn't been able to provide the rest of the money to feed everyone who needs a meal. The gap has grown so much, there's no way private philanthropy will fill it, says Ellie Hollander, who heads Meals on Wheels America. Philanthropy works only in places where there are lots of wealthy individuals and corporations to tap. In Dallas, donors who can write checks for $1 million or $2 million have helped while the waiting list from about 3,000 a year ago goes to 2,000 today. What do these still on the list do? People have come to us who are literally starving, or they ask family to bring stuff from the food bank. It's whatever they can do to get food into their homes, says Catherine Krause, president of VNA Texas, the agency that delivers the meals. Programs like those in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, aren't as lucky. There aren't many rich donors or big companies. It's worse now than ever has been for funding. In 1963, President John F. Kennedy, quoting the historian Arnold Toynbee, noted in a special message to Congress, "A society's quality and durability can best be measured by the respect and care given to its elderly citizens. That respect and care may be threatened if government support to feed the elderly is cut." And now we'll turn to obituaries. The first is for Paul Raymond Bell, 92, of Georgetown, passed away at 12:30 p.m. Wednesday, May 10, 2017, at Presence USMC Danville. A celebration of Paul's life was held at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 13th at Georgetown United Methodist Church. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to the Georgetown United Methodist Church. Next is Mary Lou Burgoyne, 81, a lifelong resident of Georgetown, Illinois, passed away at 9:50 a.m. Friday, May 5th, 2017 at Hawthorne Inn, Danville. A celebration of Mary Lou's life will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 16th at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown. Visitation for family and friends will be 4 to 8 p.m. Monday, May 15th at the funeral home. Next is Barney Gillis, 86, of Portland and formerly of Cayuga, Indiana, passed away Thursday, May 11, 2017, at Cookeville Regional Medical Center in Cookeville, Tennessee. Graveside services and burial were held at 10 a.m. Monday, May 15th, at Prairie Township Chapel Cemetery, Scotland, Illinois. There was no visitation. Next is Marva Louise Tools of Danville. Gained her heavenly wings on Monday, May 8, 2017. This ended her valiant fight against Alzheimer's disease. A celebration of her life will be held on Wednesday, May 17th, at Greater Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church, 609 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will start at 11 a.m. until the start of the service at 12 noon. Next is Kenneth Irvin, 76, of Rock Falls, died Friday, May 12, 2017, at CGH Medical Center in Sterling. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to noon Tuesday, May 16, 2017, at the McDonald Funeral Home in Rock Falls, 1002 12th Avenue. Funeral service will follow at noon at the funeral home. Burial will be with full military honors, which will conclude at Coloma Township Cemetery in Rock Falls. Next is Antesia D. Franklin, 84, of Danville, died at 9:15 a.m. Friday, May 12, 2017, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, Danville. Next is Joyce Elizabeth Resch, 93, of Danville, went home to be with the Lord on Wednesday, May 10, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was held from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, May 15, at the Church of the Holy Trinity on Vermilion Street in Danville, followed by a Mass at 11 a.m. Next, Marva L. Tools, 79, of Danville, died at 11:56 p.m. Monday, May 8, 2017, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center, Danville. Funeral services will be at noon Wednesday, May 17, at Greater Shiloh Baptist Church, 609 North Bowman Avenue of Danville. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery, Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon Wednesday at the church. Leek & Sons Funeral Home of Danville is in charge of arrangements. And finally, Gladys Sullivan, 89, passed away peacefully on Saturday, May 13, 2017, at Pleasant Meadows Nursing Home in Chrisman. Visitation will be held from 11 to noon Wednesday, May 17, at Trinity United Church of Christ, Westville, with services immediately following. Interment will be in Danville National Cemetery, 1900 East Main Street, Danville. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, the family requests memorial donations to Trinity United Church of Christ, 311 East Moses Avenue, Westville, Illinois, 61883. And here are a couple comments from Rediscover Danville, Lifelong Learning by Carol Nichols. It's graduation time. Yesterday, I was very proud to see my son-in-law graduate with his MBA from University of Illinois, the culmination of years of juggling challenging classes, late-night studying, demanding work, and a growing family. This week, I will be there to watch over 250 students who have faced the same types of challenges walk in the graduation ceremony at Danville Area Community College, accepting their degrees and certificates. There are many opportunities to continue your education, and whether your goal is a degree, additional knowledge for career growth, or learning for learning's sake, look into what makes sense for you today and keep working on it. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for May 15, 2017. Have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.